For many of us, our parents freely gave love, shelter, support, taught us life's lessons as we grew. Those parents were our heroes. So it can be hard when the tables turn, when the nurturers become those who need our help. As baby boomers age, more adults than ever will become their primary caregivers, and that can lead to some very emotional decisions that can wreak havoc on family dynamics and financial health. In Las Vegas, there is another layer of difficulty. Senior citizens often move here to retire, and sometimes they are far from their supportive families. We are going to talk about some of those dynamics and some of those layers of difficulty right now, beginning with Abby Kirkendall, an assistant professor at the School of Social Work at UNLV, with a research background on caregivers of those in hospice. Abby Kirkendall, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
Paint us a picture of the struggles in Las Vegas that are there facing families who find themselves with parents who are aging.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think I've been in Vegas for 5 years, and what I've been able to notice is, like you had already said in the intro, older individuals move here for the warmer weather. Maybe they always went to Las Vegas for vacation. And their loved ones, their, you know, family members are 3,000 miles away back on the East Coast. So it's really tricky when, you know, there starts to be mental and physical decline for, you know, both spouses in terms of who is going to, you know, be there for them when they're not able to pay the bills, or, you know, things start getting left on the stove, or they're not, you know, remembering just to do basic daily things. So what we need to do more of in Southern Nevada is really develop further community services to be able to support these individuals.
What do you find children of these parents do on average? Are we a culture that tends to just put our elderly in homes? Do they live with us? I mean, what do we tend to do when these things come upon us?
Usually, there's definitely cultural differences. And typically, though, what happens is there's usually a course of events. It doesn't just happen one day you wake up and, you know, your mom and dad aren't able to take care of themselves any longer. So there's usually a series of medical crises that can happen that eventually lead up to them needing either, you know, it might start off with you having to come in every day to help out, help them transport them to the doctors. And then, you know, possibly it can then move into them having to have mom and dad move into the home. So, and from there, it can be very stressful in terms of just trying to manage the adult caregiver's own home life with children and husband, and then also taking care of.
Well, this is not a new subject. I mean,
no,
caring for
not.
The elderly, having elderly family members around us has been with us practically forever. But there seems to be something, maybe it's just more self-centeredness on the part of baby boomers like me. I don't know.
I think I've just been avoiding saying that, but we are more of an individualist culture.
Yeah.
I moved here from Buffalo, New York. My mom and dad are back home. My dad has Parkinson's. So, you know, it's hard. Yeah. I moved here for my job. So,
yeah. Is there anything else that is in the environment that makes it a little bit more difficult today, or makes it somewhat more challenging today when it comes to caring for parents and elders?
Well, I think that there's a lack of support. There's nothing really, there's not a lot out there. We have support groups, but if you need to leave work, there's the Family Medical Leave Act, and that gives you 12 weeks per year, but it's unpaid leave. So, you know, what are you going to do during those 12 weeks? And it's just, it's overwhelming. It's just very, very stressful to try to, you know, take care of mom and dad and still financially support yourself.
Mm-hmm. Now, we want to turn now for a personal story in the subject to a familiar face in Las Vegas. Sherry Swinsk is the weather anchor on Channel 8's Morning News, and she is also a mother and for many years cared for her own mother who suffers from Alzheimer's disease. Sherry Swinsk, welcome to KNPR.
Thanks, Dave. Nice to be here.
You've got a story that a lot of us know well, maybe all too well, from our own personal experiences. And this was you are someone who belongs to the sandwich generation.
Oh yes,
a child, also a mother, and in this case, your mother's illness, which was a tremendous challenge. Talk about that a little bit. What was a day in the life like with your mother when you were caring for her?
Well, I still care for my mother. It's just now it's more the caregiving role has changed. She's in memory care here in Las Vegas, and so the role of caregiver has kind of changed from home caregiver to advocate caregiver. And it's not on a daily 24/7 basis, but it's more of, you know, now I come in and I visit with her and love her as much as I can, but I've kind of changed. I've kind of handed over the caregiving role to the folks who take care of her on a daily basis and make sure that she has everything that she needs. But when she was living with us, and we bought our current home strictly for moving my mother in with us, we needed a living situation.
How long ago was this?
It'd be 6 years ago in July. Okay. We bought our current home, and so. But as Abby said, you know, nobody wakes up one day and says, "Oh, I'm going to take care of my parents." It's been in my life plan all my life. I think most of us start to see signs of illness, and especially when it's a dementia or an Alzheimer's, and suddenly it's worse. And then suddenly a neurologist says, "You know what? Your mom can't live by herself anymore. Have you thought about moving her in with you?" And you go, "No. I hadn't really." But then you start making life changes and plans.
So what? Talk about the moment or the time when you made that decision.
Well, she was having senior epilepsy, so she was falling a lot at home, and so we were worried about the danger of her falling, hitting her head, more the physical danger. So that was really the impetus for buying a home that would accommodate her. She was living in a casita separately, still semi-independent, but then I started noticing that things were just not right with conversations. And one day I looked at a high school picture from my high school senior picture with her, and she asked where she was. Why wasn't she in the photo with me? And I said, "Oh my goodness, what is going on here?" She put herself in the same, you know, time frame of life as me. And then while she was still living in the casita fairly independently, I started getting phone calls at 3 o'clock in the morning. She was asking me, What are you fixing for dinner? What are we having for dinner tonight?" And I'm like, "Mom, it's 3 a.m., not 3 p.m. I said, "Have you looked outside? It's dark." And she said, "What?" You know, she was just really confused. Typical sundowners with folks who suffer from Alzheimer's and dementia. So it just progressed from there. And she's got a type of dementia. It's called dementia with Lewy body disease. It affects your motor skills, vivid hallucinations. Can't hold things. She was spilling things. And one day I walked in the casita and she had the microwave on for 22 minutes instead of 2 minutes, and those kinds of things. And so those were all, you know, you go into crisis mode. You go, "Oh, okay, this is not working."
Right. And there must have been a tipping point at which she just said, "This, okay, now we got to look for more options."
Well, she had a very bad episode where we found her on the floor, where she had been there for several hours. And we went into practically 24/7 in-home caregiving. And she was bedbound for months. And after about 9 months, we reached the point of, I just didn't think she would walk again. And we had done caregiving. I had done weekends. We were paying quite a bit for great home care. But at some point, I realized I don't think our home was not equipped for this anymore. And it was incredibly stressful.
You had your husband and your son mm-hmm. with her as well. Mm-hmm. This must have put an almost unmeasurable strain on everybody, just everybody on edge.
It does, because you're juggling a completely different schedule, lifestyle. You're still trying to have some normalcy at home. You know, you still got to work. And for me, my hours are pretty crazy. You know, we start at 4 a.m. there on 8 News Now in the morning. And then my son gets out of school in the afternoons. And then, you know, you've got all your other things in life that demand your time and attention and your emotions and your abilities, and then those all get compromised because your focus goes straight to your loved one that you're trying to care for who can't help themselves.
Was it, I know this is personal, but it's, I think it's something a lot of people would identify. Was it difficult in your marriage?
It's stressful for sure.
Sure.
Because, you know, you wind up spending a lot more time with that loved one than you do with what you'd normally do in a healthy, normal life where your parents are taking care of themselves and you're spending time with your own family unit.
Mm-hmm. Was there a big financial responsibility as you began to look at the care options?
Oh, huge.
Yeah.
We're writing checks every month. The bank accounts get drained. You know, the savings accounts dwindle. We're on the last retirement savings account right now. Mm-hmm. And but at some point, we had to make the decision that in-home care was not going to work because, again, I wasn't sure if she was ever going to walk again. We've been in memory care a year and a half, and it's been kind of an amazing transformation. Her form of dementia is very sporadic, so she can recover. And she's been on a great road to recovery while she still has a lot of memory issues. And she's losing her language skills right now, but she's in a wheelchair and she's pretty self-sufficient, getting herself up and down and dressed. And so for that, I'm very grateful. Hmm. And so I spend as much time with her as I can, and I still take care of providing things for her. So it changes. The journey changes, and you have to be able to change with it because it's stressful. You feel guilt. You're grateful for every day, but sometimes you still beat your head against the wall and go, oh my gosh, I don't know that I can do this again. But then the next day you go, oh, I'm so glad she's still here and I have time with her. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, so it's every day's different.
When, and as you said, you've drawn down on a lot of retirement accounts. I mean, have you and your husband talked about, well, what are we going to be doing when we're 65 or 67 or 70?
Well, you know.
What do you do?
You just have hope. And you know, you look for hope that there are more resources, financial resources out there eventually for families like us. And that's where you look to the state and you look to the federal government. We need more research. We need more programs. We need more financial aid for families who need that care and that help for their loved ones. And that financial support is huge. We need that.
Mm-hmm. Many children, adult children, I'm sure, are wondering, okay, financial support, yeah, dipping into retirement, okay. But they're wondering, what did it cost to put your mother into the care facility that she's in now? Any sort of a sense as to the monthly or annual?
Well, it depends on, you know, every individual is different. Depends on their level of care that they need. Mm-hmm. But it can range anywhere between $3,500 on up to depending on how much care you need. Mm-hmm. So it's quite expensive for someone who's not expecting to have to pay out that much monthly.
It can range anywhere from six.
Abby Kirkendall.
Yeah, it can range anywhere from $6,000 to $8,000 a month, and then even home care. If you want a nurse just for home care, it can be $20,000 to $30,000.
No, wait a minute. Let me stop you. $6,000 to $8,000 a month. I mean, that's $70,000 to $90,000
yeah,
a year.
Exactly.
And not many of us earn that much working. End to end, every year, full-time
no,
job.
No, and many people are under the perception that Medicare will cover my nursing home. Well, it covers rehab. If you need a hip replacement, you need to go in and get rehabbed. But if you are going in just because there's caregiver breakdown and you need to be transitioned into a nursing home full-time, there is no coverage unless you purchase long-term care insurance.
Okay, so for those of us who do maybe have an elder living at home who needs this kind of care, and we're not making a small fortune every year, what are the options? It sounds like there aren't very many of them.
Well, you can apply for Medicaid, and that is a very long, daunting process. And we were just talking out in the lobby that there are very few nursing homes that will accept Medicaid patients because the daily rate is so much lower. So. But that really is the only other option.
That's the only other option.
In terms of pain, yeah.
I mean, it just sounds like, okay, well, either die young or your kids are going to go broke somehow. I mean, somebody who's really inclined to see the glasses half empty might look at it that way.
Yeah.
What do you tell people? Because I imagine you probably get this a lot, just in conversations and such, saying, what should I do? What should I do about my dad or my mom who's just not able to care? Do self-care anymore?
Well, I mean, typically I just assess how much family support is available to them. You know, are there any other friends, religious community, anyone else? There are a lot of volunteer agencies and things like that out in the community. I usually start with that first. see if they can afford a home health aide at home for the at least some of the time, and then, you know, see what their financial resources are, and then talk about Medicaid. It's not an easy conversation.
No, it sure isn't. It sure isn't. We're talking about adults who are caring for their aging parents in their homes. Some of these families are doing this while also caring for children of their own. We're talking with Abby Kirkendall. She's an assistant professor at the School of Social Work at UNLV. She does research on caregivers of those in hospice care. And Sherry Squinsk, you know her from the weather she's done for years and years with 8 News Now in the morning. She took care of her mother with Alzheimer's for many years directly and is sort of overseeing that now as her mother is in a facility. And joining us now is Cynthia Mora. She is a family care consultant for the local chapter of the Alzheimer's Association. Cynthia, welcome to KNPR.
Thank you so much. A pleasure.
Well, we're thinking, after hearing all these stories and things, you're hearing Sherry's tale, some of the things that Abby Kirkendall was saying, we're thinking, save us. Now, there surely is a lot of hope. But at the same time, as we were talking a couple of minutes ago before the break, this is financially, this can be a really big problem. It's very daunting for a lot of people. Talk a little bit about what you do as a consultant.
Yes, I can.
Care.
And we do, unfortunately, get a lot of people that are stressing out when they care for somebody with dementia. So what we do is we have a lot of services for the community. I'm a family care consultant, which means, you know, I get calls from people, whether they've been diagnosed or they're in the middle of the disease. And we sit down, we make an assessment, and we help them plan according to where they're at in the stage. Some people, they've just been diagnosed. They have no idea what they're going to encounter, so we sit down with them, and it's very important to plan, because like Sherry said, you know, it's a lot of stuff coming down the road.
But boy, when you say plan, I mean, you know, most of us aren't planning for a parent to start showing signs of dementia.
Exactly.
So what kinds of questions do you ask when you're talking to the children of elders who need some care?
Yeah, we find out what their needs are first. You know, if the person just been diagnosed, that means a lot of times who's ever caring for either parent or spouse, they don't know what dementia is. They don't know what the diagnosis means. So we try to educate them a little bit on the person has been diagnosed with and what's going to happen in the future. So it could be, you know, financial planning. Do you know, I mean, maybe a lot of times they don't know they're going to have to care for the person.
Right.
So we bring that up.
Mm. Mm-hmm. What are some of the other things you try to prepare these families for?
We try to prepare them for example, power of attorney. It's important to have that if you're going to be the one caring for the loved one. Because once they forget how to sign checks, once they forget how to do things, then it's hard to help them.
Mm. Yeah. Each individual is different. Each family is different.
Yes.
So how do you go about determining what the best arrangement is in each case?
Well, we usually sit down. Either we, you know, talk on the phone, or we can also do home visits, or they can visit us at our office. And we pretty much assess the situation. We ask them a couple questions, and they'll tell you what they need or what their questions are, and pretty much we can base it on that.
I would imagine, given that in this country so many of us are a paycheck or two ahead of big, big financial problems, most of us have really large nest eggs. We don't have big emergency funds and such. I'll bet you get some questions about that, where people say, I've got no money in the bank account. What do you tell them? What happens at that point?
Well, there's different resources like we were mentioning before. And then there is also a resource that's called Home and Community-Based Service Waiver. If somebody doesn't qualify for Medicaid, they might qualify for that one. And that one can help with different services such as in-home care or assisted living. So we try to find out what the resources are. If maybe they're married to a veteran, then they also have benefits. So we try to, you know, ask a lot of questions to see how we're going to help them and what this family would qualify for.
I'm wondering, Sherry Swinsk, what your experience was like as you began to look at other options beyond having your mother at home. I mean, what kinds of questions did you find yourself having to ask about getting care for her?
Well, I had to look at, I had to project down the road where we were financially, because at that point I had already taken over all of Mom's finances. I was paying her bills and I was doing everything for her. So I knew just about how much money she had and how long it was going to last. But also anticipating that the level of care was going to go up, as would the price tag. So the costs increasing. And so I looked, I took a lot of personal recommendations. I did a lot of personal visits because making that choice to move mom out of my home and put her in a community, a memory care community, was a tough one. I mean, me, like a lot of people, you don't ever want to think about, oh, well, my loved one's never going to live in a place like that.
What, was that an agonizing process where you look in
the
mirror and you think,
it's the huge G word, Dave.
Yeah.
It's guilt.
Yeah. You look in the mirror and you think, I'm failing my mother.
Absolutely. What? Why can't I take care of her?
Yeah.
And then you look at how stressful it is and you feel the emotional breakdown coming on. And that's where the Alzheimer's Association saved me. And they said, look at yourself. Look, caregivers sometimes don't outlive the people they're taking care of because the stress can kill you. And I'm looking at, I'm trying to take care of my family and my mother and do the best job I can. And I had to look at and assess the whole situation. So I had to look at finances. I had to look at for a community that would eventually accept Medicaid. And there are very few. And I was very fortunate to find one for her that is not only does accept it, but is a really nice living environment. And so I feel really, really lucky. And you know what? A lot of times, loved ones, you know, the first question they ask when they move in is, okay, this is nice. When can I come home now? And so, and that happens, and that goes on for quite a while. It's still going on, and we're going on almost 2 years, Dave.
Almost 2 years.
Yep.
Wow. We are talking about caregiving for elders who need care, often for reasons having to do with dementia and such. And we wanted to know if you are caregiving. And if you have made some of these difficult decisions that Sherry Swenska has described, and how things went for you. Do you have parents or older relatives in care facilities now? How did you go about that entire process? Call us at 702-258-3552. That's 702-258-3552. You can also tweet us at KNPR News. That's our handle. Or write us online at knprnews.org. Abby Kirkendall, we got a call a couple minutes ago from a lady named Patty who was wondering, how do you prepare your children? I mean, you may have talks about whether it's sex education when they're very young or other things when as they get into adulthood, but how do you prepare kids for the possibility that they may need to help you out or provide for some care?
Well, I think it's just having very frank conversations, which it isn't hard to do, about life and death. And what is that going to look like? You know, talking about financial planning and what are the wishes? You know, the parent needs to express to the adult child what their wishes are in terms of, you know, do you want to go into assisted living? Do you want to go into a nursing home? What happens cognitively? You know, as Cynthia had said, putting power of attorney in place, having advanced directives, having a healthcare proxy to make decisions for you. These are some of the things that you can at least do, you know, up front.
And then you got to tell the kids, here's where the documents are, here's what to,
yes,
to do.
Exactly.
That's not
yes,
easy.
Yes, my mom
either.
And dad have told me exactly where things are hidden
you
in
and
their
me,
homes.
Yeah, you and me both. They made it easy for us, didn't they, in some ways. Cynthia Moore, I'm also wondering, too, about families from other cultures. I have some relatives, Hispanic, elder mom lives with the family. And is there a cultural element to some of this as well? If an older parent is starting to show signs of needing advanced care,
yes,
how do you get past that?
Yes, there is. There is a lot of differences. I work a lot with the Latino community, and I see, you know, they really don't want to place anybody. They don't want to talk about hospice. They don't. So you really have to spend more time with them and trying to tell them the advantages, and, you know, because they're really stressed having to take care of somebody. Some people, I have a client that has two children with autism, and then they're caring for mom. And then, I mean, it's really difficult.
How do you tell a client like that, this is not your fault? You're not failing. If you put your father into an Alzheimer's facility or some other facility, this is not reflective of a failure on your part.
What I do, it's a lot of times we encourage people to attend support groups, and we also have a Latino support group where they meet and they meet other people and they share ideas. And it's really helpful to hear it from other people too, not just from me, but from other people that are going through the same situation.
Our number is 702-258-3552. And Leonard joins us now. Leonard, thanks for calling and welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. No, I just, I'm telling your screener there that my mother was in Tucson, and we put her in a care facility there. That didn't work out. We brought her up here to Tucson. I mean, up here to Vegas, I'm sorry. And the last couple of months were a little difficult. I think the key was when we took her to the doctor told us, you know, she doesn't have that much longer to live. Get hospice. We put her in hospice. Hospice will come over every couple of days or so, take care of her, change her. They would give her health care because she had pretty good insurance. They would, you know, change her and make the bed and do all the personal needs that she had. And she passed away here in January, the 25th. And, you know, we were sad about that, but we had done all that we could. My wife works at night. You know, I worked in the daytime, so she would come in and do everything. I mean, if it wasn't for my wife, this is not advertised for my wife, we never would have been able to do that. But the hospice and everything, they were just great, and it took a lot of the burden off of us.
Well, it sounds like a difficult experience, but it's one that worked out well.
So, yes, it did. It worked out
very good.
Well.
Leonard, thank you so much for your call. 702-258-3552 is our number. Sherry Swintz, I would imagine when you would get into work at 4 in the morning, you know, to do 8 News Now, I'm sure others around you probably would hear stories and maybe have a few stories of their own. And I'm sure that as somebody people recognize, you probably hear from a lot of folks. What kind of advice do you give to anybody who's facing a situation similar to yours?
The biggest advice I can give to anyone is reach out for support. Ask for help. I think a lot of caregivers carry the burden on their own shoulders. And that's the biggest thing, is just seek out others. Find people to talk to. Find people who are going, as Cynthia said, through the situation yourself, because it is huge to find out that you're not alone. Because I think when you live in that bubble and you're just on that hamster wheel day after day after day, you can really emotionally start to cave in. So you've got to find others who are going through the same thing. Their situation may be slightly different, but the strength that you can get when you can just talk with somebody else. Even the other families whose loved ones live in the community where my mom lives, what they go through as the disease progresses, because it's all a little bit different. But it just helps so much to just know that not only are there people there for support, but they care. And then ask people, boy, if your neighbor can cook a meal, if somebody can take your son to soccer practice for you, if you can take another friend who's caregiving to a support group with you, do it. It's a community. It takes a village. You can't do it by yourself.
Sherry Swensk is the weather anchor for 8 News Now, morning news. She cares for her mother who has Alzheimer's. Cynthia Mora is a family care consultant for the Alzheimer's Association. And Abby Kirkendall is an assistant professor in the Department of Sociology at UNLV, former hospice inpatient and home care social worker. Thank you very much.
School of Social Work.
School of Social Work. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Dave, can I say one more thing?
Very quickly.
Support the Alzheimer's Association. It's our future. It's our hope for ending Alzheimer's.